Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey guys, you ever wonder what Phil and I wear while we podcast? You can find out if you join our Patreon. We'll also be talking about the films of 1989, but that's definitely less important than seeing our Zoom backgrounds, our headphone choices, and our sweatshirts.
It's true. It's true. You'll get to see all the various pieces of artwork that I have framed on my office wall, and you can see Kenny's garden, sort of. So that's something. That's exciting.
It's a hanging garden.
It's a hanging garden. But perhaps more important than anything, we are doing this Patreon to cover the best films of 1989. Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, with amazing guests like Tom Meissen, Liz Hanna, Joanna Robinson, Brian Cogman, Chuck Hayward. You can sign up at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. And for $5, you'll get access to all the audio of these fantastic episodes. For a few bucks more, you'll get video as well of our 99 and 89 episodes. And perhaps, most importantly, you'll be supporting us so we can just keep making podcast content for you guys.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the films of 1999, eating some sad sandwiches out of a cooler at night at a school here in 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Nybart.
And I'm Phyllis Cove.
And with us again, new to 99, but not new to the pod, Molly Margraf and Jerrica Lieberman, my friends from Step Up and my friends from life and our friends from life.
Indeed.
Great to have you guys back.
And now friends of the pod since you've been on twice.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
Is there swag I get with this or no?
No. There'll be some swag down the road maybe. I'll just say this. I felt a little bad because I threw this at Molly and Jerrica last week because I was like, Kenny and I, a little behind the scenes, Kenny and I were going to cover this movie pre-pandemic. Yeah. We had another guest that we were going to do this with, and it kind of kept getting moved around, and then ultimately we just kind of put a pin in it.
And kind of hoped we would never have to do it, that no one would notice.
But we decided to do every movie, Kenny, as you know. So it was sure inevitable did. That we would cover this film at some point. And I was like, obviously we want to have you guys back. So I was like, let's see if they want to do this movie. And thankfully, you guys were both game. But I'll say this, and I don't know how you felt about this movie, Kenny. I mean, I don't think any of us liked this movie, just to be above board. But I kind of liked it more this time than I did the first time. I mean, not like leaps and bounds by any means, but like I actually really hated it the first time. And then this time I was like, is this movie kind of just ill-conceived bad? And just like, it's not a good movie. It's just badly directed, I think, is maybe the thing that I would yeah. that and the lack okay. of chemistry between the two leads.
I actually agree with you, Phil. I watched this the first time, Molly and Jerrica, on lunch breaks in our office. So as I often watched movies,
as all the great films
when we were on,
are meant to be watched
when we were on Step Up, so
on a laptop
on our you know 60 minute lunch is not a second over. I would I'm kidding. We had these like luxurious lunches.
Yeah. They're three hours.
We're not going yeah.
back. Mendocino Farms sandwiches.
Random people would be sleeping.
Mendo Farms.
The food that fuels every writer's room across yep. Los Angeles.
Yep.
True.
Mendo Farms.
So I did not have the best experience watching this in four sections the first time. I watched this in a mere two sittings this time, the second of which started at 5:15 yesterday morning with my two youngest boys who kept looking over and watching it. And Cole, the four-year-old's like, you know, I think I like this. Layla wouldn't like it. Layla would be scared, but scared. I like it.
Interesting.
There's gunplay in the movie.
There is a little bit of gunplay.
The blue overall, like, cold vibe.
Yeah, yeah, no, this movie's super warm. This movie really is super inviting.
It's not a good movie, but I didn't think it was quite as doomed this time as I did last time.
Mm-hmm. I felt that, yes. I the first time I watched it, I mean, let me be very clear. I was bored both times. At no point was I like, pulled into its mystique or anything like that. Like, this movie is not good. But this time around, I found that there were scenes that I locked into that I was like, there's something here. And like, I appreciated, I guess what I'm getting at is I understand why this went through years and years of development. I understand why there's like, why this book and this script floated around for a while and that there were a lot of stars that thought there was something here. Because I do think that the concept of this movie isn't necessarily flawed.
No.
I think that it like, you know, I actually appreciated how it sort of unpacked, maybe too much, but unpacked like what happens to loved ones when someone dies in a plane crash and like the protocols and the kind of digging into all that kind of stuff. I thought it was interesting. I don't necessarily think that it was well executed.
Yeah.
And like, there's an interesting notion here. Mm-hmm. I guess my question to Molly go ahead.
Just real fast. I've been intrigued by this premise since the moment I heard it in 1999.
Yeah. Like, it's actually a great premise.
Yeah.
And there's so much to like, one thing that I feel like is apparent is how much we've been screwed over by technology, because the amount of steps you can ask for, like the suspense is so much higher when there's no cell phones. Like, he has to get quarters to call they don't know if she's on the plane. Like all that sequence was the best part of the movie for me. Like trying to track down if his wife was actually on the plane was sort of the most suspenseful, interesting part of the movie to me.
I will qualify that.
This is an aside, but is it strange that his wife looks just like Kristin Scott Thomas?
No, it's very weird.
He's got a type.
I was like, oh, there's Kristin Scott Thomas. Oh, it's not her. Sorry, Jerrica, go.
No, I was just going to qualify that and say, well, I agree about the stakes and finding it the 15-minute scene of everybody at the fashion boutique finding out if she was on that plane.
That's pretty hilarious.
That scene, I literally typed out, the director of this film has an Oscar for best director. How did this see? Like, it is, it's no, like, yeah. a, it's like fucking Noises Off. It's
it
like
is.
A fucking play unto itself. Mm-hmm.
Yes, he's, it really was. It was. That Sidney I felt Pollack like. Is,
yeah. That's true. But I did like the idea of like, each, it's like everything, like you're saying, there's an idea behind there. Like, I love this character of like each character finding out, being like, oh shit, she was cheating. Like, well, this guy's just trying to figure out if she's alive. It's like both humiliating and heartbreaking. It was just so poorly executed.
Yeah.
Like, so poorly done.
What a great idea.
You're so
what a great idea. Yeah.
Well, considering we're ahead of the story,
Sorry.
Yeah, only, sorry.
No, jump around.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about considering the audience is ahead of the story in that moment. It only works as the way you're talking about it, Molly. It only works as like a character moment, but because like we know what has happened, there is no tension about what has happened. There's only tension about how he's going to react to what has happened. We do not need this. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the one thing about it is that Harrison gives you nothing. So it's like this director is pulling
it's some of
these
the worst
responses.
Work you'll ever see.
But the responses we're supposed to feel based on your day players. So this director is like pulling these performance out of these people who are just like in the shop because Harrison's giving you this.
I totally agree with you, Jerrica. And I want to kind of, Kenny and I have talked about this on many occasions, but like intent, right? Like a filmmaker's intent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there is unquestionably, in my opinion anyway, a goal here for this movie. It's just ill-conceived in the sense that, like, I think that Sydney Pollack, who has made many different types of films, like Tootsie, mm-hmm. you know, They Shoot Horses, Don't They, Out of Africa, these are all drastically dissimilar films,
some
right?
really yeah. good and some really, really good. Bad.
Right.
And like some people don't realize are as bad as they are.
Yeah.
Like Tootsie and Out of Africa are awful. But no one seemed to realize that one.
Yes, I gotta do a rewatch.
They are awful. But his movies from the 70s are incredible. So
yeah, They Shoot Horses, Don't They? It's an unbelievable film.
It's one of my favorite movies. I watched it.
It's an unbelievable
movie.
All right, I'll watch it.
Yeah, I think you guys would really, really enjoy it.
It's impossible not to.
Sydney Pollack just kind of loses the thread a little bit as a filmmaker.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And this film is so tonally all over the place. Like mm-hmm. when I think about the side by side of whatever the fuck this investigation that Harrison Ford is a part of that involves
what is
Dennis
that?
Haybert and like oh. you're just like, what is that? It's like a completely different movie.
Could anyone explain what even happened?
Also,
it was a bad cop, maybe?
No, it's like
it's an internal George, affairs thing, right?
It's an internal affairs thing, and
but George is somehow a serial killer because he looks in the dumpster and he was like, "This is George's work." Like you it's know it's, that he's done this before.
This is how crazy. He kills.
Terrible.
It's terrible. It's a waste of time. It's also, this movie clocks in at around 2 hours and 20 minutes. So, like, if you pulled out that investigation, this movie could have been a tight, dramatic thriller about these two widows, which is what this movie should have been solely about.
And I also
it
think
not
that
have been
the,
about
that
her and her election either, for the record. But anyway.
Well, yeah. I'm going to ride for that a little bit because that at least so I understand the purpose of the internal affairs thing, which is essentially to put Harrison Ford in danger. And sure. But that's fine and lame, and I didn't like it at all and took up way too much real estate. Mm-hmm. The congressional race does make sense to me. Because there is a real impediment for them getting together, which is her, you know, apparent reputational hit she would take if she found out. So that one doesn't necessarily irk me as much, but it really does. You know, I was thinking of when I was on Hindsight, how we kept having, I don't know if you guys know what Hindsight was about, a woman who travels 20 years into the past.
Totally. Seen every episode.
Thank you.
Great show.
We kept getting the note like, well, what's she doing for money? What's her work story? You know, and I kept pitching like, wouldn't it be great if she just remembered the score of every Jets game? She could just bet on it. We don't have to do a work story. Because the idea of someone traveling back 20 years in the past to go work for a zine.
To have a job.
Yeah. It's just like, at the very least, if she's going to have a job, let her have a job where she gets to use her, like, you know, future sense. And that's that's what I felt with this movie. It's like, well, Harrison Ford has to have a job. He has to have a work story. But it's not, he doesn't. No, he really doesn't.
What's weird about it is that on some level, it feels like, to your point, and I agree with you, Kenny, the congressional stuff revolves around secrets. The idea of like her keeping something to herself, keeping it away from the public because of the, you know, fear of what sort of fallout there might be. And I think what they thematically think that the Harrison Ford stuff is about is investigation, right? It's him digging up stuff. It's about him trying to, but he doesn't really do much investigating, quite frankly. He just kind of harasses people, it feels like. He like just yells at people a bunch. So like he's not a particularly good cop either.
It's very, it's weird.
So it's just sort of like, I don't get it. Sorry.
I feel like, no, I was just going to say, I actually feel like the detective story, I wish Molly, oh, she can hear.
I was a guest 3-year-old who had some thoughts.
Oh, cool.
That's the detective story. She hated it.
I was just going to say, the detective story felt like it was written by somebody who was like, this must be what detectives do. Very much like yesterday when I wrote a scene for Molly about religion and she was like, no, this is not religion. But it just felt like why the hotel? Like, what do you, they didn't go. It's a hotel. Like, what are you going to find? It was like, oh, I know, two robes. Like, there isn't two robes in every hotel room.
I was it was interesting because I thought for a second that it was going to go down a path of finding out that their loved ones were involved in something deeper than an affair.
So did I.
And there was a moment where that felt interesting. And like, what's interesting to me about the congressional race story, like I agree with Kenny, there's something about it that would have been nice if they played it well. Like she fell for this guy who mended her heart, but then she couldn't be with him because, but it's interesting watching those stories now. It's like, because it's so dated in the sense that we've had Trump as president.
No,
like the scandal of her ending up with Harrison Ford is like not a scandal at all, which is not, you know, they couldn't have foreseen that. But I always feel like it's interesting watching those. And the other thing about that is I felt like we were going to find out some twist that Harrison Ford was the crooked cop. And that's why she couldn't be with him. Like once it came out that he was. Well,
it's interesting.
Up.
Because I'm kind of two minds about it. Because there's a part of me that I think we all kind of felt like one of these affairs or one of the wife or the whatever would somehow dovetail into one of these investigations or something so that Harrison Ford's, you know, relentless attempts to get to the bottom of it would bear fruit.
Yes.
That doesn't happen, which is in its own way kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because when she says to him, like, there's nothing here, that's actually an interesting notion. It's just deeply anticlimactic and ultimately feels as though we've been following two threads that don't go anywhere.
Yes.
But I just
she is right that there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Because these people have no fucking chemistry.
Well, there's
absolutely nothing here.
They hate each other.
She is trying her so hard to like pull something out of this guy.
Yeah.
But
we tweeted this the other yesterday, actually, which is this is what happens when you're offer only and you don't do chemistry reads.
Yeah.
And it really is amazing to me how often. When you think about how many movies are cast with giant movie stars that refuse to do an audition or refuse to actually do a chemistry read, and they just hope that they'll have chemistry, like think about how insane it is that millions of dollars hangs in the balance based on the hope that two most likely overpriced actors will just have chemistry is crazy. Like it's a really crazy notion. And this is what happens when that goes sideways. These two people, I would think that there's two things at play here. The first is that they don't have chemistry just inherently. And then on top of it, I think that Harrison Ford is doing something, like is actually trying to put in a performance that's antithetical to the movie. But I could be wrong.
I think you're being generous.
I was actually wondering if he was high the whole time. Like, I know he has a reputation.
Also possible. Like, also possible.
He does love marijuana, is the word on the street. Allegedly. Right. Don't come for me, Harrison.
Same. That's the rumor.
The rumor has it.
I think you could outrun him now. Not only is he always hot, not only is he always high, he's like 80.
You're right.
Yeah.
I will say, you guys also beforehand did act like he didn't perform in this movie. This is true. But I don't think he looks bad for an elderly gentleman. He has an awful haircut.
Awful haircut.
Still got the earring, but he ages quite nicely.
Yeah, and he's not a bad looking man. I actually think that in the next film he does, which is What Lies Beneath, he looks infinitely better. And him and Michelle Pfeiffer have like genuine chemistry.
They have genuine chemistry. Yeah.
Like, and they both seem hot in that movie and like, and they're into and hot it. And, you know what I mean? Like,
I honestly, I think Harrison, first of all, Harrison Ford is a well-known gorgeous old man. So no one is questioning whether or not this guy aged gracefully. Correct. That haircut was awful.
Awful.
Like horrible. Like just, you can't even look at this guy. You can't even, cause she's like, Kristen Scott Thomas, for you know, all her flaws as someone trying to do an American accent, is like,
it was rough.
She's like an oil painting. She is like gorgeous. Why would she spend a second with this like idiot with the supercuts haircut?
I think that she's, I mean, we need to talk about her accent for a second because it's bonkers. I'm not sure. I mean, is she trying to do a New Hampshire accent? Is that what that sounds like? Or
New Hampshire is like a Boston accent.
Right?
No, she's doing her best not to her R's.
It's bizarre. I want to read the synopsis very quickly for the people that haven't watched this film. After a plane crash in which both spouses are killed, Sergeant Dutch Van Denbroek, played by Harrison Ford.
Normal name.
Totally normal name. Dutch is a totally normal thing to call somebody. And Congresswoman Kay Chandler, played by Kristen Scott Thomas, lives are connected. Their spouses were headed to the same address with identical keys under Mr. and Mrs. Plane Tickets. The investigation leads to startling discoveries and unexpected romance.
Mr. Plane Tickets was my father.
Yeah, I mean, ridiculous. Random Hearts opened on October 8th, 1999 in second place with $13 million behind Double Jeopardy. It would go on to make $74 million on a $64 million budget. That just goes to show that like Harrison Ford movies are going to open most of the time, no matter what.
Incredible.
It's amazing.
$75 million put that crazy guy with this horrible haircut on.
I mean, that is $70 million in 1994. We're talking about like $150 million today. I mean, hilarious that many people would go and see this movie. It's got 15% on, that's 1-5, ladies and gentlemen, on Rotten Tomatoes from critics. Oh, wow. And 24 from audiences.
And 13 on Apple TV.
13%. There you go. So, I'm going to read a little bit of two reviews. Roger Ebert gave the film 2.5 stars, said there are many good things in Random Hearts, but they're side by side instead of one after the other. They exist in the same film, but they don't add up to the result of the film. Actually, the film has no result, just an ending. Leaves us with all of those fine pieces still waiting to come together. If this were a screenplay and not the final product, you could see how one more rewrite might fall into place. Maybe the fundamental problem is the point of view. The interesting character here is the woman, but the movie stars Harrison Ford, so the film is told from his point of view and saddled with the unnecessary crime plot he drags in, a plot with no thematic connection to the rest of the story. How about a movie about a Republican congresswoman who loses her husband and gains a cop who looks like Harrison Ford, all seen through eyes? Now that would be a movie. Sure. It's a more interesting movie, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, she was a Republican.
She was. Do you not remember the line?
That was a very uncomfortable scene.
It's the best. It's a post-coital scene where... She says, "Are you a Democrat? I have some books for you to read."
Yeah, we'll have conversations. I'll give you books to read.
Yeah, then it's, I'll give you books. And it's books for what? To become a Republican?
How to become a Republican. For dummies.
Shouldn't be that hard. It's not that long of a walk for the cop to become a Republican. Little did he know. But like, but the irony is they used to all be Democrats. But the only reason I was confused is because, so this billionaire that jumps in the race is a primary challenge? That's the idea. Because they said he blew in from left field, or should I say right field. So that's, the whole thing screwed me up a little bit, this idea that this guy is a primary challenge to her seat in New Hampshire. But yes,
it's an amazing congresswoman thing. I just want to read a
That's
very
how
quick
crazy shit was.
Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a D. Said Sidney Pollack's preposterous romantic mystery starring Harrison Ford is the movie that dares to ask, what's even worse than learning that your wife has been killed in a plane crash? Learning that she was on her way to Miami for a weekend rendezvous with her lover. Is it possible to look like you want to cry and strangle stray pedestrians at the same time? Harrison Ford succeeds, but I'm not sure that this is the acting triumph that he thinks it is. In this gloomy, introspective mode, Ford steamrolls every scene with the heaviness of his emotions. He's become a thick-witted, broodingly stylized hero torment man. And then the bomb report said every year a prestige picture with a top shelf director and a bankable lead turns out to be a complete creative and commercial misfire. That movie in 1999 was Random Hearts. yeah, it's really just... So I want to just take a very quick second here to talk about where Harrison Ford was in his career at this time. Harrison Ford obviously was an enormous star, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, what have you. Then he has Witness, Mosquito Coast, Working Girl in the mid-80s, all great movies, oh, yeah. You know, Oscar nominations, all of that stuff. Presumed Innocent, no. Regarding Henry, great movies.
He's only ever been nominated for one Oscar, just Witness.
Yeah, but those movies were nominated for. And then, you know, then he's got Patriot Games and The Fugitive in the early 90s. Then he does Sabrina in 95, which I would argue he's miscast in, but I understand that there are people that love that movie. And Air Force One, 1997, an enormous hit, his last movie, if I would argue of any, you know, relevance. Because then you've got 67 Nights and Random Hearts, both of which he's cast against people that don't work. Like, those are both bad.
Yeah, on an island, right, or something. Yeah,
it's African Queen, sort of. Oh, that's right. What it is.
I mean, look, it's not a great movie, but it works a lot better than this movie.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you know,
because at least it's a romp. At least it's like fun. Yeah, at least it's got like adventure-y kind of like stuff.
Yeah, it's trying to do some Romance in the Stone stuff, and he at least is, you know, playing that older. He's a pilot, but he's playing that older Harrison Ford type.
Yes.
This is just gross.
But then he does What Lies Beneath, which is a hit that Zemeckis shoots in between Castaway when Tom Hanks is losing all his weight and growing a beard. And then he has a string of K-19, Hollywood Homicide, Firewall. Those are all movies that don't exist, that are terrible movies. And he comes back to life with Crystal Skulls because, you know, it's Indiana
Not
Jones.
Really, though. People,
but doesn't really. And then he kind of goes away for ages and does a bunch of shitty movies. I would argue he's good in the new Star Wars movies. He's good in the new Blade Runner. But again, like, these are sort of, I mean, it's we're past the point of Harrison Ford having relevancy.
It almost doesn't matter if he's good in those movies. He certainly didn't get cast for any reason other than having been in the previous ones.
Yeah.
The one thing I would point out that I think he is quite good in, and that was a bit of a surprising casting, was 42.
He
really does kind of play a character in that movie in a way he almost never does otherwise. Now, it's possible he was going for an Oscar, you know? Yes. I mean, like, with that particular role, it's possible he saw this as his last shot. But, that was probably the last time he had something close to a fastball.
Yeah, I'm going to write for one other movie that is sort of a movie that doesn't exist that I actually quite like, and it's Morning Glory. You guys ever see that movie? The Rachel McAdams?
Rachel McAdams. Yes.
It's basically a morning show.
Yes.
it's because it's Harrison playing off of Diane Keaton as these morning show personalities. And like, it's actually a much better movie than it got credit for at the time. It was kind of a bit of a bomb. It was actually a Bad Robot project too. Like, it just was sort of this like weird little movie that I actually think is a lot better than people give credit for. And he's good in it. And again, I think what you're getting at too, Kenny, is Harrison Ford could very well find a pocket of being like the elder statesman supporting roles in things. And he probably could have had a couple Oscar nominations by this point if he just did a couple smaller movies where he showed that like he's still got range. He can still do stuff. It's just,
if he wants it, you know, I mean, he really is like 80 years old, right? So
he is 80.
I'm not really exaggerating. He's an 80 year old man. And if he,
but he's,
you know,
still flying planes.
Well, he's Indiana Jones. He's shooting an Indiana Jones movie now.
Yeah. It's not that he's not working, but like, maybe he does. Maybe he wants to, you know, pull a Henry Fonda. Henry Fonda was probably like 40 when he did On Golden Pond.
But correct. Maybe
pull a Henry Fonda and try to win one, you know, one last one in some, you know, or a Christopher Plummer. I mean, like, he could have played that. Was it Christopher Plummer or who won for Beginners? It was, right?
Yep, there's Plummer.
He could have played like a Christopher.
Absolutely.
Do that role.
Totally could have done that
particular role. And I think that would have been interesting. And maybe there's a world where someone is like, I just had this thing only Harrison Ford can do.
Yep.
Like, weirdly enough, Arnold Schwarzenegger did one a few years ago with when Maggie? He came back. Maggie. And That was a small thing. And, you know, people who saw it really liked it. Yep. And it's funny that at this point in their career, Schwarzenegger is the one who's like, I think I got an Oscar in me. And Harrison Ford is the one who's like, only I played this character before.
I don't know. First of all, I think it's pretty clear that Harrison Ford doesn't care about winning an Oscar because, as I mentioned off mic yesterday, he passed on Traffic, which was sort of a notorious moment, sort of a, you know, fork in the road for him career-wise. He passes on that in, I guess it was around this time. So that movie comes out, Traffic comes out in 2000. So around this time, he chooses to not do a film that's so sort of political to some degree.
He's like, I already did my political film.
Random Hearts. I had my scene where I said I was maybe a Democrat. Had he done that movie, I think he would have been great in that film. Not to say that Michael Douglas isn't good in that movie. He's completely serviceable and fine. I just think that could have been an amazing moment for him and it might have opened doors. And ultimately he chose not to do that. All that being said, it's what it is. Kristen Scott Thomas, however, at this point in her career, is in an interesting place. She's just English Patients 96. She does Horse Whisperer in 98, a movie that I'm not really sure anybody really remembers.
Apparently,
Horse Whisperer.
Horse Whisperer was like Billy Bob.
Big
Thornton,
book.
Right?
It was a big book.
Big book. At the time.
I started to try to read it. It's you know,
it's rough. It's not great. And Scarlett Johansson plays her daughter. You know, because that makes sense. Sure. Again, Robert Redford and Kristen Scott Thomas, odd casting. Mm-hmm. Kristen Scott Thomas is just, you have to be, I mean, very specific about the people she plays off of.
She played off of Prince in Under the Cherry Moon. It was pretty good.
Did she?
She was. It's her first movie. She was the female lead.
I gotta check that out.
Movie.
I didn't know she was in that.
Oh, dude, it's an insane movie. One worst movie of the Razzies. So that's why I watched it. But it's
what's it called again?
Under the Cherry Moon. Directed by Prince.
Okay.
And actually, I think it was Prince and I think Mary Lambert got fired off of it, who did my episode of Step Up. Mm-hmm. And,
really?
Yeah.
How fun for you.
It was fun for me. And
you ask her about it?
No. She also did Pet Sematary. I was trying to get her on for Pet Sematary. And
She
was very busy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
but I didn't ask about Under the Cherry Moon. I didn't want to ask her about the time Prince fired her. But it's a black and white. It's a black and white movie set in France that's a homage to the jazz era, completely, you know, raceless. But like the music isn't even good. Prince is like a row. It's worth watching.
Okay.
It's different.
I just want to see what she looks like. I'm looking her up right now to see what she looks like.
Fantastic.
I'm sure she looks. She's stunning. Kristen Scott Thomas, obviously. You know,
Prince knows how to pick them.
Right. Yeah. I feel like the first time I noticed her, and it feels like the first time most people probably noticed her, was Four Weddings and a Funeral. Yeah. It feels like that was sort of what put her on the map. She does a bunch of films. She's in Mission Impossible, Kenny's favorite franchise. And Kenny's giving a thumbs down. But it's English Patient that obviously is just, you know, just enormous.
Yeah.
Best Actress nomination, an enormous movie. She has tremendous chemistry with Ralph Fiennes in that film.
Yes.
She's great. She unfortunately just, Hollywood doesn't really know what to do with her. They put her in this, they put her in Random Hearts, they put her in Horse Whisperer. And then ultimately it feels like she does Gosford Park. She's amazing in Gosford Park, but you know, a big ensemble movie's obviously not hinging on her. You know, she's in other movies, obviously, here and there. She was in Darkest Hour. She played Winston Churchill's wife in that. And she was obviously amazing in Fleabag. She had an episode of Fleabag in the second season that she was tremendous in. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like Hollywood's just like, she's too cold. She's too frigid. She doesn't play well off of our big leading men. So we're just going to kind of, you know, that's that. It's a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer.
Yeah.
There's also snippets of, there's great guest cast appearances by women that we saw much more of later, like Edie Falco and
Bonnie Hunt.
Love that.
Bonnie Hunt. Bonnie Hunt. Oh, that was a confusing turn.
That was a very confusing turn.
Bonnie is also sleeping with this gentleman.
I was like, wait, who isn't sleeping with this gentleman?
And there's also
Bonnie Hunt is cheating on her best with her cheating with her best friend's husband. I'm supposed to buy that?
We're supposed to buy that? And also, there was like no surprise. I was confused.
It was awful.
Going into this scene,
awful.
If Kristen Scott Thomas was aware already and trapping her, or if this was another surprise, like, bam, my husband was cheating on me. Oh shit, you found out it was me. And it was like, you?
I think it's the latter.
It's the latter.
It was confusing about whether or not she was aware or what, because I thought she was asking her if she knew. If she knew that her husband had this other lover.
Which is totally plausible. The husbands are friends.
Yes.
I have the kind of relationship with my wife where I would definitely tell her if I knew this kind of thing. So it's definitely plausible that, like, she could have known.
Was that was the line originally. That was the scene, and then they were like, "This isn't a big enough turn." So they were like, "By the way, I was sleeping with them too." And you're like,
"There was no sort of fault. There was no like the person you would, unless I missed this, okay? Because there were some moments that I checked out of the movie, but there was no follow up with the one person you would talk to about this, Harrison Ford, to say like." So my husband was just a cheating all around town. Turns out it wasn't just your wife.
Yep.
He was everywhere.
Oh, it's a horrible movie. It's an interesting thing because like, all right, so sometimes I look at screenwriting, TV writing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys know this. As like, you're basically walking towards a cliff, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going as far and as far and as far out until it gets like exciting. And like, it's right there. But if you push too far, you fall over the cliff and you ruin everything, right? And that's what they did when you were talking about Jerrica. It's like they felt like they needed something else. They went over the cliff and ruined everything. They made me think that they don't know anything about what they're doing in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think what's interesting,
the other thing is like with so many of the other points in this film, it's like they don't even get near it. Right. They don't even begin to unpack like, okay, so he was cheating on her with more than one woman. That might be a narrative string we could pull on and see what else comes up. But they're like, No,
the cliff is all the way down there.
It means nothing to me unless you use it.
Also, not important, not the biggest flaw of the movie at all, but what exactly was her job? Because she was a sales lady who also occasionally covered photo shoots.
Oh, yeah.
Are you talking about his wife?
Yeah, what was his wife? Yeah, the wife. The non-Kristen Scott Thomas wife who looks just like Kristen Scott Thomas. She covers photo shoots, but she works for a department store.
She is the in-house photographer for the department store.
Oh.
Don't worry. I spent a lot of time deciding what her job was.
I appreciate that, Jerrica.
Why are we spending so much time here?
I was quite confused. They both are raking in quite a salary, too, to have that house.
Is that a job?
Where one is a detective.
It is no longer a job. I believe
I don't think it was ever a job.
No, it also might not have been, but I do believe back when like magazines had deals with fashion lines, you would do like back in the day, back in the early, what was that show? Katie Keene could have covered that.
Okay,
anyway, but she worked at a department store, which showcases various different designers.
In DC.
Yeah.
I'm not saying her to do anything, but I get that's the point. The point is she made up a lot.
Except that's why it's confusing. Because you're like, I see, she made it up and he believed it. And then they're like, no, sometimes she does do that. Just not this weekend. Sometimes she does go to do photo shoots, but it wasn't this weekend. And you're
I just say though, you said something, Molly, earlier that's worth unpacking for a quick second here, which is, in the scene between Kristen Scott Thomas and Bonnie Hunt, you're really unclear as to how Kay feels, right?
Yeah.
Even when the revelation happens that her best friend was fucking her husband, she doesn't seem particularly taken aback by it. She doesn't seem particularly thrown by it. If I'm being honest, Kay doesn't seem thrown by much of anything throughout this film, all things considered.
No.
Yeah.
Which is part of the problem. I honestly think that, and this is part of the direction issues, mm-hmm. which is that I think that Sydney's directing this film as though these people are mysterious, as mm-hmm. opposed to these people are ambiguous. These people don't actually meet, like they don't have any feelings towards things. And it's just that flatness that seems to permeate basically all the performances in this movie creates this like laconic 2.5 hours, 2 hours and 20 minutes where you're just like, what am I supposed to care about exactly?
Yeah.
Like you just genuinely have no idea what you're supposed to care about.
There was also like a great setup moment that was also disastrous acting, which is when she finds out about her husband dying and she's on camera for a promo. And there's a great opportunity there for a soup for all of these feelings and then trying to cover them. There's other people in the room. She's confused. He wasn't supposed to be going to Miami. Like she's putting it all together and we got nothing.
Nothing.
That's amazing. And even, go ahead. But I was just going to say, even in like the what I was saying earlier about him pulling the performance out of your day players, like even they weren't they were like given the same note, be mysterious. Yes. So then there's that scene where he goes, are you surprised? Again, at the fashion store, my favorite.
Oh, right. Yes.
And she's like, are you surprised?
Were you by the fashion?
She gives you nothing. And I was like, is she? Like, and I don't know. Is she surprised? Is he surprised? Well, this and then he just storms off.
Well, then there's like the woman who works at the department store with the dark hair.
Who's still kind of covering for her.
She's still covering
her after
she's
dead. Is she
covering for her?
Like, she should be thrown into the pit of despair.
And then later she confesses that she confesses her husband was cheating on her, right? Or was it her mom was cheating on her dad?
Okay. She confesses to Harrison that in the past her husband had been adulterous.
Yes.
But also so had she. And then what's weirder is she said, but also it's not done. It got because I watched it twice, guys. And also she then goes, so I would not tell you. I would lie to you.
Right.
I would never tell you the truth. And so then to Molly's point earlier about the doing the photo shoots, like she's the one at the start of that scene. Like if you watch the scene backwards, I feel like it makes more sense. But at the end of that, at the start of that scene, he's like, are you sure she shot any catalogs?
Right.
And the woman's like, yes. And he's like, how do you know? And she's like, because we've seen the photos. And then she proceeds to be like, but I wouldn't tell you. If I was lying.
Oh, she goes one step farther. We were supposed to catch that she was lying the whole time.
But she also goes one step farther and like stops the other woman that's working at the department store
from
saying anything and giving Harrison any information.
Don't you feel like that scene was in the wrong place?
Where
she's trying to stop the woman from giving Harrison the number in the Rolodex was like in the wrong place. Like this ship has sailed. He knows.
I said this to you guys yesterday about Harrison Ford. Watching this movie, it's almost impossible to understand this guy's capable of a charismatic performance.
Yes. Yeah.
Watching this movie also makes me feel like, how do we ever make good movies? Like, I'm thinking about a movie that feels it's not similar in setup, but it's similar in tone and it's similar in kind of like, you know, this whatever. It's a domestic drama. Not a domestic drama. It's a workplace drama. Broadcast news, which is like similar in tone and scope is what I'm getting at. Tone and scope. And yet every moment in that movie is like perfectly calibrated. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like nothing in this movie is well calibrated. Like it's we were all intrigued by the premise because it is an interesting premise. But every decision they made moving forward was like the most convoluted and confusing decision possible. Yep. And like, I mean, I would only to speculate, like it just seems like one of those situations where Sidney Pollack has an Oscar. Sidney Pollack had an incredible run in the 70s and 80s. Sidney Pollack gets a script. This is perfect. I could shoot this tomorrow. Calls up his friend Harrison. Actually, looking at the script, it was probably
Sabrina. Pollack. They did Sabrina together.
Yeah, they're friends. I got another script for you. Might win an Oscar. Who do you want? Who's that hot girl from Four Weddings and a Funeral? Et cetera, et cetera. But I looked at the writer too. It actually seems like Sidney Pollack was the genesis of this because the writer is a guy who wrote Out of Africa and Absence of Malice. Out of Africa isn't a terribly conceived and written film. It is just a film about the only white woman in Africa.
Sounds like a problematic
and white guy
movie.
And white man.
Absence of Malice is a very good movie that feels like the work of a director who really gives a shit.
Well, can I just say what's interesting that you brought up James L. Brooks? Because in the 90s, he was attached to this movie with Kevin Costner to star in it.
And it's very
different movie Brooksian. That would have been.
Right? Yeah. Like a very different film. But to your point, Kenny.
Costner would have like done this.
Costner would have done this. And James L. Brooks would have understood that this is a movie about infidelity. This is a movie about like the weird. Like James L. Brooks' movie would have been Bounce, which I don't think is a great movie by any means, but it would have been more in that arena. The Gwyneth Paltrow, Ben Affleck movie, of just sort of like the grief of a plane crash and kind of, you know, people that are brought together under these circumstances. Like, that's a movie I can get on board with. What is this movie?
You know, I love this movie. This is not all that dissimilar. This is not all that dissimilar from The Love Letter.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Which is the Kevin Costner movie he did this year.
No, The Love Letter is...
Not The Love Letter, the other one. What was the one he did with...
Message in a Bottle.
Message in a Bottle. It's not all that dissimilar from Message in a Bottle at all. Like the stations in life of these two characters and the way they come together. And Message in the Bottle wasn't a great film, but it was a million times better than this. Just a million times better than
this. Also, can I just say, you bring up Message in a Bottle, which I think is interesting. Because I think, and this is not, I'm not slagging Kristen Scott Thomas in this, but if you put Robin Wright in this role, I think that this
that's
movie,
actually a good casting.
There's no way that if you put the Kevin Costner and Robin Wright in this role, all of a sudden, I just feel better about every fucking thing.
I feel like it's one fun
thing. You know who else I feel like could be in this role? After you mentioned Four Weddings and the Funeral, I was thinking like Andie MacDowell in this role. Someone who
reads
the hurt all over her face in that kind of way. Like, I feel like with Kristen Scott Thomas, A, it was just the moment, as you pointed out, but also it was like, oh, her kind of coldness, whatever, works with being a politician, but it doesn't work with the rest of the...
Of the movie. She's not maternal. She doesn't come across as particularly maternal. I mean, part of the problem here, too, I sent you guys the Entertainment Weekly cover from 99 when they had Harrison Ford and Kristen Scott Thomas on the cover of their fall movie preview. And even just the picture, they look so bored. They look so, like there's no, even in a still image, I'm just like... And I don't want to say that they had zero chemistry, but I do want to unpack for a second here the sex scenes, okay? Because there
Two.
The kissing scene in the car was uncomfortable, fucking weird, guys.
Terrifying.
Truly terrible.
Like, kind of rapey at first.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, all the jump cuts and the whatevers. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Really terrible.
Yeah.
And then to follow it up with, like, the weird, like, are you coming inside? Are you coming inside? Obviously not. You're like,
what a horrible movie. Like, no, really. Like, if like that, that is bad. That scene is so bad in context, and then or taken out of context, and then in the context of the film, that should have been the end of the relationship.
Yeah,
and there is something about an old white guy, Sidney Pollack and Harrison Ford. There is this thing where I think that men of that generation think that's how you start a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
And there are all so many movies where you see so many movies from that that's era gross. Made by these group this group of people where something that starts with like physicality that's bordering on violence and turns into just like grabbing of arms, throwing against the wall and making out. And we saw it a little bit in Sea of Love, which is from 88. But that's not like two people falling in love. That's two people like really like holding a lot of things back. And she's more into it than Kristen Scott Thomas is. And again, like even that was like very weird and uncomfortable. But this is all like, of it. This is like you missed some fucking important days at school.
Weird. It's very strange. I mean, to your point, Kenny, I think that that kind of physicality felt like passionate back then. Mm-hmm. And now watching it just feels like there's a lack of consent going on.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it's not.
If
okay.
she get, if yeah. she, I mean, even though, you know, it doesn't even like rise to the level of like that was passion because right. she doesn't right, ever right, stop right. resisting.
Yes. yes, yes, yes
mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
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 So
it's very strange.
I rewatched it like 3 times because I was like,
because she is okay. a straight A student.
I do. And also I have this. Here's the thing. When you guys talk about the movie, Jessica.
Who's Jessica? That,
did you just go, okay, Millie.
Millie and Jessica.
Jessica would like an A plus for today's episode.
I would. Thank you. However, I watched 3 times because the first time is where it lost me on this particular
scene. Fell asleep.
I had to like, yeah, I was like, and then fell asleep. But also I should let you know that I didn't look up what this movie got before we watched it. Like didn't know, I didn't research it. I was like, maybe they like this movie. So I watched it the entire first time being like, there's gotta be something to like in this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm at that scene and I was like, okay, let me just like watch it again. Like maybe it's what she says. Like maybe she says something before and we're supposed to understand that she's in pain and this is a thing. She literally says, I wrote down, why did you wish we stayed? And then it's a violent wrestling match. It makes no sense.
It's like, awful.
Also, can you explain the airports to me? Did anybody get this? They took the flight. But then they took the flight right back and they wish they stayed, like, because her car was still there. Like,
yeah, no, logistically, it makes
logistically,
no sense.
It didn't make sense. Also, that was a strange choice to show the bodies in the plane underwater. Like, there were these moments that felt like they threw them in to be like, this will make it edgy if we show something a little gruesome, just pops. Like,
I'll say this
dead
about
body
that.
In the dumpster. The floating ghostly
totally
hair.
Totally unnecessary.
Like I agree with you that, okay, here's what I'll say.
Okay.
I agree that it probably shouldn't have been in the film. Yeah. That being said, I did find that shot and that moment arresting. It did. Uh-huh. It was kind of haunting.
It was haunting, stay with me.
And I did feel like actually seeing the two of them together, the only time we see them together, is there dead bodies in that
pretty
plane?
Good.
As opposed to
that
one,
Phil. I didn't see that coming. I thought you were going to be wrong.
Can I tell you my Kevin Costner story that doesn't involve me meeting Kevin Costner?
Sure.
When I was an assistant, my first job here, answered the phone, and it's Kevin Costner. I'm like, oh my God. I go to the showrunners, trying to be calm. Guys, Kevin Costner's on the phone. And they both look at me a little confused. And they're like, oh, that's Kevin Costner, our AD.
That's
so, hey, Kevin Costner. Excellent Hollywood
hey,
AD.
Kevin Costner.
But I was so thrilled at how calmly and they knew
I
all
love
over
Kevin
my
Costner.
So this, I felt I was delivering.
That is amazing.
Sorry.
The thing I did like a lot was the way they have to identify bodies.
Yes.
In the other room.
Something
that was
really new on the TV, these dead bodies. There is no question about whether one of them got out of it. I thought that it was fantastic. It was the best part of the movie.
And that falls into the part of the film that I thought was interesting of like the logistics of what it means to identify a body when there's a plane crash. I didn't know that that was, I mean, I'm assuming that this is accurate, but I did feel like that was, to your point, Kenny, like oddly powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, I hope to never have to identify a loved one's body, but seeing them in person as opposed to seeing them on a television is just very different.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? That idea of like not even being able to see the physical body of your loved one and that it is on a television screen. I thought all this stuff, all the plane crash stuff, was interesting. And actually, I felt relatively effective, all things considered. It's once we get out of the plane crash stuff and we get into this weird sort of mishmash of things that I mean, as we mentioned, this incredible scene at the department store that feels like a movie unto itself.
My favorite.
Is just absolutely insane. Dutch throwing out all of Peyton's stuff immediately before having confirmation, I think is a little premature, but I mean, okay.
He knew.
Yeah, it was a strange reaction.
You can tell.
He really knew she was dead.
It had been like 4 hours since they had had sex. So if you go 4 hours since sex, that probably means your wife is cheating on you.
Probably.
Can we talk this for a second? The cross-cutting, again, in theory, an interesting choice, but actually kind of discombobulating and made you unclear as to where you were at any good time. It was cross-cutting and pre-lapping. So you'd have like voices from other locations. Oh, you should be like, I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to be like taking away from any of this.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. The score, I mean.
Oh my God, the score. I have so many thoughts.
Oh, the score is.
So Kenny, you've seen The Firm, obviously, right?
Of course.
Love the Firm's firm. Actually a legit great movie. I mean,
it is a great movie.
It's like 90s Grisham, Pulpy.
Yes.
It's great.
I feel like it holds up, but it's The Firm. I feel like I watched it a year or two ago and I was still in it. Yes.
Yeah. I think he thinks he's making The Firm. I totally agree.
Uh-huh. You can't make the truth is you can't make John Grisham without John Grisham.
I agree.
I mean, it works here and there. There are some movies that like come close, but there's just something about the movies that like are their own.
The Client. Thing.
And The Client, The Pelican Brief. Uh-huh. The Kill is
only the Pelican Brief. Such a good movie.
The Chamber, not a horrible film. The Rainmaker, pretty good film.
Yep.
The Runaway Jury. I mean, Those movies, The Runaway Jury.
Now you're just making up John Grisham.
No, that's a real movie.
I am not.
I promise you.
The Rural Juror.
I love John Grisham movies, and I think John Grisham adjacent movies almost, well, you know, like Presumed Innocence pretty good, but for the most part, they're mostly are trash.
But I think if he approached this movie, the thing about The Firm and the reason The Firm works so well is it's kind of pulpy and campy and a little bit silly and it kind of knows what it is. And I think that Sidney Pollack is kind of the perfect match. Tom Cruise, all that stuff. Now. It all just kind of works. It's all calibrated right.
Yeah.
So McDear, no one talks about that movie enough.
They don't talk about that movie.
No.
This movie needed that.
Yeah.
Kind of pulpy, silly. Like if it was approached less heavy-handedly, maybe it could have worked. But anyway,
Tom Cruise was giving you everything in that movie instead of nothing. Yes. Sorry, Jerrica.
I was just going to say, it honestly felt like, to me, the score the entire time, the piano score, so weird. Every time there was a climax, I was like, what do you want me to take away right now? Like, I'm confused. And it, honest to God, felt like they got into the edit room and like specifically I wrote down this one scene in particular where he goes to the apartment and she's already there and his face is giving you nothing, but it's angry. And then there's like the score of this very light piano. And you're like, did you put this in an editing? Cause you're like, everybody's going to think that this man is about to murder this woman. Like,
it is
everything.
That was like, one of the more baffling moments in the film for me was, what was the direction that he was given? Or did Harrison say, this is what I'm doing in this scene? Because he looks as though she has done something so abhorrent and so awful.
Yes.
She has betrayed him on a level that is hard to even comprehend. Murdered and the answer is, she found the apartment less than a day earlier and cleaned it out. And he's tearing open garbage by saying, what did you find? He seems like a legitimately fucking out of his mind crazy person.
Yeah, when he dumps out her purse.
And we paired it with the piano.
I'm so happy we're doing this with women because you can tell me.
Yeah.
Is dumping out a woman's purse the most aggressive assault you can imagine? Personal violation, I guess.
Short of an actual assault.
Yeah, I was like, where were you found?
Personal violation, short of something that involves actual, you know, physical.
I think it depends. Yeah. I think it depends. I think it's on the same level as reading somebody's text messages. Like, those are it's not good.
But it's also, it's just the way that it's like your personal things
that's
are important to you that you carry with you that you just like the way he just dumps it out without asking is he has the right to anything that's her personal things. And there's also some level of your purse. It's always like a tiny bit embarrassing. You know, it's like whether or not it's like the old receipts that you haven't thrown away or whatever, and tampons, whatever it is. It's like there's something like very personal about your purse, and the fact that he just grabbed it and so violently truly made me feel like, get out now. Walk out that door. Never see the man again. He's dangerous. I thought they were trying to show us.
Women hold the purse so close to their body because these are the things that they need in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you pour that out.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah.
Can I also say, you know what it also made me think? It also made me realize it was the moment where it was like, he's a cop. Like it's like, and I'm not condoning the behavior.
He is a cop,
but it felt very cop-like. It felt very like you are someone that I need to interrogate. You're someone that, and that sucks.
And I have a right to anything of yours in order to get to the truth.
Correct.
He also used that 911 reverse lookup, which I was like, you're down to abuse your power for your own personal shit. Like,
he's not a good cop.
Democrats are dangerous, is what I get from this.
That's the takeaway from this movie.
Yeah.
Also, that they had to add in the line where Kristen Scott Thomas turns and goes, "You are a cop." Yeah. And you're like, well, you've been hanging out with him for 2 weeks. Like, he said he was a lieutenant when you first met him. Like, why is that now hitting you?
he's internal affairs, too, which is like such a weird decision. But
it's also
he's a cop's cop.
I want to talk about for a quick second. He invites her to his cabin on Chesapeake Bay or near Chesapeake Bay, where they have just a bad sex scene. That's just not like it's not hot. It's not whatever. Mm-hmm. But before that, there is a couplet of dialogue that is just amazing. She says, "There are so many reasons I might be doing this. I keep thinking I'll go one more mile and turn around." And he says, "I was thinking about your mouth."
That is awful.
It is. It could not be less sexy. It could not. They somehow find a way to make this film feel so gross.
So gross.
Yes.
He's
just, it's like she's prey to him. And they did that the whole movie. Like even that weird airplane scene, like where they're on the airplane together and she's in the other row and he like looks back at her and you're like, what am I supposed to be getting here? Are you trying to be like, what's happening?
He feels, it's very predatorial in a way that I don't quite think I'm not sure they were conscious of, but.
Yeah. No, then you know why, Phil? Because he made Tootsie. And everyone said it was brilliant.
I love how much you hate Tootsie.
It's truly like this. It's like an awful, awful movie. But like, it's one of those things where American Beauty is the same way, where someone makes this movie that everybody tells the people involved, this is brilliant, make more of this. And they don't appreciate just how the opposite of brilliant it is, how creepy and awful and terrible it is. I mean, Tootsie is about a guy who defrauds an entire world pretending he's a woman. It also uses that to like sneak in and get close to his much younger co-star and like seduce her. It's like, this movie is so creepy.
This movie I'm not defending Tootsie. Tootsie is for all intents and purposes trying to be a comedy. This movie is not. And
kind of.
Well,
as you're describing Tootsie, I just realized how similar it is to Bosom Buddies, the show.
Yeah,
it's much.
Came out after Tootsie.
Bosom Buddies was 3 or 4 years after and was undoubtedly like, give us Tootsie the TV show.
So it should be said that this is the only film in which Harrison Ford plays a character who wears an earring.
Oh,
really?
Is it the only?
Yeah. So there you go.
That's how she knew he was a Democrat.
It's interesting you bring up Tootsie because Dustin Hoffman was the one who bought the book rights to this 15 years before.
Interesting.
I don't know, Dustin Hoffman in this role, I don't know what that looks like, but I mean, I guess it's possible.
He very well may not have bought them for himself.
That is true.
You know,
who knows what he was.
Yeah, anything's possible. So I want to just talk about the end of this film. After they meet up at the apartment and they have this fraught scene, she takes off, he goes to catch her, and then Dennis Haysbert shows up and shoots him. And we have the one of the clunkiest, most ridiculous action scenes I've ever seen.
Oh boy, this scene.
Where in broad daylight, this man was just going to gun down a cop. Just like is, I mean, a choice.
All the bad guys in this movie are black too. It's
yes.
Like,
also true. Uh-huh.
No, his partner's sure. Not. His partner's
Charles S. Dutton, one of the greatest American actors, is reduced right. To having like four lines.
Four lines. Yeah, he's like,
well, I'm not dirty.
But yeah, so he gets shot in the leg. She runs to his aid. He goes to the hospital. He has, I don't know if he has surgery. It doesn't really matter. But there's a scene in a hospital room where, and I don't know if you're laughing because of what I'm about to say, Jerrica.
I don't know. You're going to have to say it first.
Harrison Ford's demanding of his watch back is
it's
hilarious
so
to me.
The only thing he's upset about is
he's like, I don't know where my watch is. And then a nurse shows up. He's like, get me my goddamn watch back.
Like, were we supposed to glean that his wife had given him the watch? There is so many things that they just threw out there without any sort of emotional attachment.
You could have cut that from the scene so easily, and yet they left it in. It's so bizarre to me.
So bizarre.
Like, is it even a Rolex? Like, what? I don't. Why are you obsessed?
Is it even a Rolex?
Why do you need it so
probably,
bad?
It's probably a fucking Timex.
I don't think a cop, an internal affairs cop, has a Rolex. But it just, it was so.
He has a very nice house for being an internal affairs cop.
And a beautiful cabin.
At JCPenney.
But I brought up the watch thing is because this kind of is a perfect encapsulation of like when the gruff, angry old man Harrison comes out in movies over the span of like late 90s, 90s, early 2000s, what have you. Like when he's saying, get off my plane, you're like, yes, great. Like everyone cheers. When he say, give me my watch back, he just seems like a crazy old coot that's just yelling about his watch.
Well, he used to have a plane. Now he has a watch. I mean,
there are also like, speaking of jewelry, insane choices from the character. Like you've already gleaned your husband is cheating. You find a present shaped like a jewelry box and think this won't go poorly if I have my daughter open this. I mean, I thought that it was going to be engraved with the wrong initials, but... Yeah. It was like you're watching every decision this brilliant politician makes. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? You're just giving your daughter the mistress's gift. Kate Mara, adorable as a teenager. Was that Kate or the other one?
That was Kate. And why does she look exactly the same? Like her face is exactly the same.
Exactly.
I don't know.
That's billionaire money.
It's very strange how this movie resolves itself because part of it too is. And by that I mean their relationship, where I'm just like, okay, she goes to the hospital, she says, you know, she's kind of shitty to him, and he's trying to like mend things, but like it's an awkward scene between two people where it's just like, yeah, you kind of lost your shit at the apartment back there, so we're like done. And he's like, but I was shot, feel sorry for me. And she's like, I'm good. And it's just a very odd energy.
She's kind of like, I do. You know, like it wasn't like I'm good. It was like, I do. You're right. You got shot and I feel bad. Boo.
And I then feel we, like,
yeah. Boo.
Boo this film.
I'm gonna say Jerrica.
Oh, I mean, the whole thing just, I was there a time jump between that and the airport then? Okay.
Oh, 100%. Because
did they say
there's
long?
An election that we don't see?
I mean, and all you get is like snow. So I was like, was that a season?
Year? This is a perfect example to me of what this movie thinks it needs to hold your hand on and what things it doesn't.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, this is a perfect example of I need to know chronologically where I am.
Yeah.
And instead you've just been like, I have to glean from a scene with an assistant that there's someone that got her job and she says like, get comfortable. Like it's a very strange scene.
Yeah.
And then Dutch stalks her to an airport.
Which how did he know which one? I mean,
well, how did he know which one? How did he know where she was going? I guess maybe he could glean that she was going to New Hampshire. But all this being said, he calls her assistant, I guess, to find out where she's going. He, I guess, just stands at this That's bar right. for an indeterminable amount of time.
Right.
Sees her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a very confusing end to this movie.
He's like, oh, right. The last scene of the movie.
I totally forgot.
It's crazy. And then they have this, what I could only describe as a way too cute, strangely ambiguous scene.
Yeah.
So ambiguous.
Where I'm just supposed to be like, what am I supposed to take away from these two? Like,
yeah.
He invites her to go to a movie and she says, wouldn't that be something?
And then what sips his beer.
Are you being sarcastic? Are you?
I don't know.
She has a few of these like Americanisms that yes. sound so weird rolling off yes. her tongue. Like when she says it's 2-0 against the home team.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That
no,
was weird.
You don't say that. I don't believe you.
Yeah.
There's another. Wouldn't that be something? It was such a weird way. It's just like, yes. also. Yes. Like, this is such, like, 101 shit. Like, I want to take you to a movie. Like, you don't have anything you can call back to their relationship? You don't have because one it was thing six that seconds. Means something to these people?
Violent it's, wrestling. It's That's all.
I want to violently wrestle you.
Wrestle you in my sedan.
I would have been.
I mean, I even just, like, even a weird joke about, you know, her being a Republican and losing, whatever it is, like, some sort of, like...
At least you got the little, house like, back.
I got my house.
Speaking
back.
Of
yeah.
things that they needed to hold your hand on, I just want to ask if anybody else was yes. confused about yeah. this. The voice messages in the very beginning.
Oh my God.
I did not understand that those were not. So when Harrison Ford goes to the bar and is like, you know, I don't know if she's going to show up for dinner. I was like, I'm confused. Didn't she leave you a message? Are yeah. you the two leaving the message? And it's not until the end of the yes. movie that you're yes. like, oh, it was them. I was so thrown.
You bringing yeah. up, first of all, that makes absolutely no sense, but you bringing okay. up the voicemail messages, I have to bring up when at the end of the apartment scene, Dutch listens to yes. a voicemail that she leaves and she literally says, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know?
You know?
Like,
what? Yeah, just like Molly Reed. That was good.
Forget subtext, guys. Forget, like, first of all, no one would ever leave that message. I don't understand why anyone would. I mean, there's really no context for that. But then it's just like, so wait, now I'm supposed to feel sympathy for this person or something?
Oh, and then it doesn't end there because then it pulls back and he's like, we had sex that morning.
4 hours
That's around. Why she oh. was late. And then he's yeah. alone in the room and you're like,
yeah, she's not even there.
Scene?
You know
it's
what?
Crazy.
Other moment was lacking again, nitpicky, but she has that moment where she throws out the political speech to give yeah. an emotional one.
Correct.
She doesn't say Correct. Anything, just wraps it up. Like yeah. I thought she was going to give a powerful open up about like the trauma she's gone through, both grieving a husband she never knew. And you were going to see this personal side of this politician and it's, instead, she's just like, thank you. And everyone's giving her a round of applause.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
I think Worst the more movie. We talk about this movie, Kenny, the more I think this might be like bottom 10 for us.
Bottom 10. It's worse than I thought. It really
can
is.
Can you give me a couple other examples of your bottom 10s?
Yeah.
Oh,
what's
yeah.
the scale here?
Phil, you talk. I'm just going to look up mine.
Yeah. I mean, Story of Us is definitely up there. Story mm-hmm. of Us is probably better than this because I don't know. Story of Us at least is kind of like playful.
It's more competent than this.
It just is.
There's always what you want to hear about your movie. It's competent.
Yeah. I want to talk
We're talking about Rob Reiner and fucking Sidney Pollack. But
fair.
When these guys
Two of
when
our
these
greatest
guys,
American filmmakers.
I know. When these guys yeah. lose their fastballs, they are Oof. Gone.
I want to talk about one scene I actually did like. Which was the first scene between Dutch and Kay when he goes to her apartment. And there's a nice tension there insofar as her not wanting to acknowledge the insinuation that he's making that there was mm-hmm. a spousal mm-hmm. affair. Mm-hmm. And they're both good in the scene. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, I mean, and part of it is because they don't need to be romantic, and that they can just kind of really sink into what this movie should be, what this movie could have been, which is the sort of tension that exists in them, in what these two people have unfortunately been forced together because of. You know, there's kind of the interrogation of their marriages, but also just him being a cop and her, like, it's all kind of there and it all works really well. And this was a scene that I think I either wasn't paying attention to the first time we watched it, Kenny, or what have you, but it was a scene that made me go, like, maybe I didn't hate this movie as much as I thought. Like, this is a weird one because of the time we've spent away from this movie and kind of a reevaluation. And, like, listen, I'm not writing for this movie, but I do think that oddly I might have liked it more this time around. But then as we continue to talk about all of its flaws, it's just shockingly inept. It's just...
Movies are so bad, Phil. But I'm going to give you the bottom
Please
10.
Give us some bad ones. Yeah.
So the worst movie, at least according to me, that we've done is actually Chill Factor. The actual worst movie we've done is Love Stinks.
That's the worst
movie. Then The Other Sister, Thomas Crown Affair, awful. Entrapment, The Story of Us, Mickey Blue Eyes, Baby Geniuses, The Haunting, The Very Thought of You, Runaway Bride. These are some of the worst movies.
Yeah, these are some of our bad ones.
Now, looking at these numbers, I gave Chill Factor a 3, Love Stinks a 4, and The Other Sister an 8. I know what I'm going to give this movie.
So here's the thing. And when we do rate this in a moment, I guess what I'm trying to say is this movie's not good. This movie's bad. I'm not writing for this movie. But when I put it next to those movies, I think that those movies are bad from, like, concept. Like, The Other Sister is bad from concept. The Other Sister shouldn't be made. Like, I think it's better than The Other Sister. This is my point. I think that this movie is better than Chill Factor. I think Definitely. That whether you like Harrison Ford and Kristen Scott Thomas in this movie together, they at least have star wattage watchability. I would argue the Chill Factor is just a flat line. Like, it's
better than the three movies that I just mentioned. It's worse than every other movie we've done.
It is not good. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it. But I want to go back to what we were talking about at the beginning for a quick second and just kind of look at this film from 30,000 feet. Conceptually, I think that the four of us this afternoon could write a better movie based on this subject matter.
This afternoon?
Yes.
I'm free. You guys want to do it?
And go.
But I know that we, as four competent writers in 2022, would at least be able to sort of mine this for what I think is interesting terrain. And it's depressing that they didn't. But
you want to rate this one?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but let's rate it.
No, that's right. You go first, Kenny.
Champing at the bit.
Do it.
I actually gave this film a 25 coming into this podcast, because I guess I didn't think it was as bad as it is. I'm giving it an 11. I'm giving it an 11. I think the movies above it are Thomas Crown Affair, which is obviously better and I should reevaluate, and Entrapment, which stinks very badly and is better than this. So 11 for Random Hearts.
Here's my question to you, though. You bring up Entrapment. Which movie has more chemistry between its two leads?
Entrapment. Definitely Entrapment.
Who's Entrapment? Question. Is that Catherine Zeta-Jones?
And Sean Connery.
Sean Connery. That's great.
And so, but they're not really doing it in that movie, Phil. Remember? That's like not really
their thing. They're
dancing around it. They're not really doing it. And, like, it's so much more chemistry than this.
I mean, he does watch her get out of bed naked. He watches her sleep and then sees her get out of bed naked. It's not great.
I'm not saying it's less creepy than this too. All right.
That's true. Jerrica, 0 to 99. What did you think before this podcast? And what did you think after this podcast?
Oh, before this podcast, I gave it a 13.
Okay.
Because that's what Apple TV gave it. And I was like, that seems spot on. Like, that feels very accurate. After this podcast, I would go ahead and give it like an 11. I'm right there with Kat. It's just gone down a little bit more.
Molly?
Okay, well, going into the movie, quickly discussed with you all. So it the bar was really lowered. Yeah, so I went in being like pleasantly surprised at like a 15, maybe 14, 15. I mean, it's still a disaster, but you know.
Yeah.
I'm also going to settle on an 11.
Where are you now? I'm also
going to settle on an 11.
Hell, doesn't even matter what you do now.
Yeah.
11 is the answer.
Rude. So here's the thing. I rated this back when we originally were supposed to do it over 2 years ago. And I gave the movie a 20 back then.
Oh,
interesting.
Then I watched it the other day or yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it a little bit more. And I gave it a 35.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But now we've spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm back down to a 20. I can't really. Uh-huh. I mean, not that a 35 is a glowing review by any means, but like I'm giving it a 20 for a couple scenes that I liked, for a concept that was not well mined but had some stuff. I mean, guys, I can't really ride for this movie. I mean, you gave it an 11. 11's a fair rating for this film.
There was a fight in the bowling alley. That went nowhere.
A what?
I've completely forgotten.
The fight
forgot
in the
that.
Bowling alley?
Oh, yeah.
Nowhere. It never. Just,
oh, yeah.
I took a bowling alley.
Yeah.
2 years ago, Phil, I took a ton of notes on this. back when I used to take notes. So I have my rating back then, too.
What was your rating?
It was a 24. And I said,
oh,
wow.
I said, what does this dumbass movie think it's saying? One of the worst movies I've ever watched critically. I said, we're ahead of the characters at every fucking point. I don't understand this stupid fucking movie. I was pretty mad.
You were angry. Yeah, I remember because when we originally set out to do this,
you were
not thrilled about doing this film, understandably so. And I remember it was like a jam in situation where we were trying to do it really quickly. And I feel like I had a bunch of notes too. Like I look at this document, and I was just like, God, I took a lot of notes on this movie that did not deserve the time I put into it. But so next week, I'm a little curious.
I fucking hated this movie.
Yeah.
I wrote at one point, this is a sad ass movie in every way. Some sad ass sex in this movie. No pathos, no self examination. She's gonna fuck him into becoming a Republican.
that is exactly what she's gonna do.
That was
Can I just say, I missed that she was a Republican because of the way she delivered that line. It could be a variety. It was like, are you? I heard it as, are you at least a Democrat? Like we have all these problems, but are you at least a Democrat?
And then he goes, "What if I am?
What if I am? Yeah."
It's the most wishy-washy. It's so weird.
Wishy-washy.
You'll read some William F. Buckley. You'll be fine.
I also wrote in all caps in my notes, why are they panicking at salsa dancing? Like she looks, they're looking at the salsa dancing, and then she panics. And she goes, we have to get out of here. And then says, you really are a cop about the digital camera. Somebody takes a photo and he's like, I'm going to go get it. And she's like, okay. You really are a cop. And you're like, I know.
It is. So, yes, please horrible. Go ahead, Kenny.
You want to hear some of my openings from back then?
Yeah.
I had two that I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
From the bottom of the Chesapeake Bay. Okay. And from restricted good. Parking.
Love restricted. That's both, your, that's your best one.
Pretty good.
But
pretty good.
I actually do really like that you picked the sad sandwiches because there's something about the fact that he calls her.
It's the worst.
We're only on her side of the phone. She picks up the phone. They have a conversation. He says, do you want to get some dinner? She's like, I would love to. I'm not that hungry, but like, I'd love to see you.
Yeah.
Cut to a picnic bench in a park with two sandwiches and Ziploc bags out of a fucking cooler. I'm just like, dude, are you trying to woo her? Like, is this what you think is like, I just want to say one last time for what it's worth, because I'm looking at Sydney Pollack's credits here and I'm not going to ride for Tootsie. I know how much you hate Tootsie, Kenny. Totally fair. But like, they shoot horses, don't they? The way we were, three mm-hmm. days of the Condor, mm-hmm. you know, Out of Africa, The Firm, Sabrina. It's just like, and then this movie feels like it was directed by Google. Like that it was like a Google translator directed this movie.
That's accurate.
Yeah, that does feel like that, 100%.
This is why I said that
the computer put the screenplay together.
Yes, yes, yeah. Totally, Kenny. Sorry, Molly?
Sorry, what did you say, Kenny?
Kenny just said he'd be a great blank check.
He'd be a fascinating blank check person for the Blank Check podcast because he does have this Reiner thing, which is like the films you mentioned are all in different genres. Mm-hmm. He's adept at, you know, comedy and drama and action, all these things, but he is a distinctly 70s filmmaker who made 70s films in the 80s and then made 80s films in the 90s. And by 1999, he had totally lost his way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely. It's also just like, you know, he's got The Firm and Sabrina that lead up to this, right? The Firm is obviously an out of the box, huge hit.
Masterpiece,
great, big movie, very expensive, made a lot of money. Sabrina is a remake of a beloved movie, oddly cast to some degree.
People like it, though.
People do like it. Mm-hmm. And it did quite well. Mm-hmm. And then this, it's very strange. But Molly, what were you, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you going to say before?
It wasn't exciting. It was just like, I think that the whole thing reads like the computer wrote it. You gave this the plot.
100%.
And then Google directed it.
Yeah. Definitely explains the voicemail reveal at the end.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's worth underlining here mm-hmm. that she warns him not to listen to the messages, then leaves. He listens to the message. He says, "We just had sex," and then there's no one. I want to just underline again that he said that to nobody.
To nobody.
So weird.
Next week, we're covering Futurama with Mike Natale, and I'm curious: did you guys ever? Were you Simpsons Futurama people? Did you watch those when you were a kid?
I watched Simpsons when I was a kid. I think I did like an episode of Futurama. I didn't really get into that one.
Never watched Futurama, just Simpsons.
But Simpsons, right. And the reason I bring this up is I think that was the case with most people. That show actually one of the most successful premieres ever on television and the most biggest dropped episode two that's ever been. Like, I think that everyone was just like, the new Simpsons show, sure. And then they're like, yeah, good. Huh? And then
watched the premiere the night it premiered and basically never watched another episode. Actually, the thing is, like, I think it is for me, but I just never really, you know, felt like it was something that was calling to me for whatever reason.
It's very like it's got that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy kind of vibe to it, that Douglas Adams sort of Kurt Vonnegut, you know, subversive kind of energy to it. But I think part of the problem is that The Simpsons was so ubiquitous, and The Simpsons, which is like in the DNA of an entire generation, people were not ready to see that type of animation do something different from what The Simpsons does, if that makes sense. Like, I just think, but what is fascinating about the show, and obviously we talk about this in the episode, but just this weird journey this show has been on of like, it's on Fox, it's canceled on Fox, it's brought back on Comedy Central, it's canceled on Comedy Central, it's now coming back on Hulu. It's just like this weird thing where it's just like, it's obviously successful enough that there's a fan base there, and yet it's just weird. It's a weird show.
Among it, and I won't be on this podcast.
It is just myself and Mike Natale, but it is a fascinating thing nonetheless. Guys, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us. Can't wait to write a movie this afternoon.
We're going to write a movie this afternoon based on Random Hearts.
I believe you owe us cocktails for making us watch this movie.
And we can't wait to. You guys need to come on the 2009 Patreon. We'll send you the list, and you guys.
Send us the list. We should get to pick this time.
Last time we were
assigned Little Monsters.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Now we're assigned.
Kenny doesn't want Jerrica to do something.
What do you want me to do?
No, I don't want Jerrica to think that we didn't notice that she has a random heart on her shirt.
Oh.
No.
Thank you so much.
Obviously.
I appreciate that so much. I did.
By design. I know.
With the earrings as well.
Look at these random hearts.
Nothing is random, Jerrica. Everything is intentional.
And I appreciate it so much because we have now, I mean, go ahead and tell them, but I have looped these guys into all of my fashion making choices going forward thanks to an accidental text message.
So, can you imagine if I posted that photo on our Twitter?
I would die.
Post that for this episode.
Yeah. You can use that.
When this episode drops, we'll put it on it'll be on our podcast, like it's 1999 Twitter feed. You guys can see the accidental
outfit. Picture. It was a Super Bowl outfit, fans. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. The listeners, Jerrica meant to just text me her Super Bowl outfit to ask how it looked, and she texted it to everyone on this podcast.
It's going up. It's going up.
Can I just say last thing?
You look great, Jerrica. It's not like there's anything embarrassing.
Thank you.
It's not embarrassing. One last thing I'm reminded of when we're talking about her shirt. It is a stupid title that does not. Why is it Random Hearts? Like, I kept being like, what the fuck is the name of the movie again? Two Hearts, True Heart. What the fuck am I watching?
The thing is, Random Hearts is actually, by the way, Random Hearts, if it was the James L. Brooks, Kevin Costner, Robin Wright movie, for instance, let's just say.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense, right? Because there's like a rom-commy kind of, it's wrong for this because it's.
Yeah.
This is just, it feels...
I never hated that title. I always thought that the premise and the title was intriguing and the movie...
It doesn't say anything about the premise.
It actually, for me, I actually agreed that like after I watched it, I was a little bit like, yeah, I mean, that was random. Like, what else would I call this? Like,
that's actually true. Like,
that's true.
It is super random. Unmotivated. It should be called Unmotivated Hearts.
Yeah,
I feel like random came into our vernacular hardcore in that era, in the late 90s. Yeah. Everything was suddenly random. You know, the word usage wasn't that popular prior, but it became a popular word.
One last thing, please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989, Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hanna, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits1999. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits1999. Thank you so much to Ernie and Will for producing our episodes, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our amazing art and theme songs. And most of all, thank you all for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.